morning, Tucson and all of Southern Arizona. Welcome into the 1030 The Voice studio this beautiful Tuesday morning for your drive time hour of Tipping Point with Zach Yenser. I am your host, Zach Yenser. Daily in-depth news, conversation, and talk about the people, ideas, and issues shaping Tucson's future. A full show ahead today. Thanks for joining us. 790-2040 is your call-in number to join this community forum, this conversation that we get to have live every day. You know, Tom, I was thinking, a lot of some will say, you know what, I listen to the podcast a little bit more maybe than I listen to it live. And some will tell me I listen to a little bit more live than I do the podcast. It's the same thing, Tom. If you listen to the podcast, it is the live show. Here's the one big difference. When it's live, you get to call and interact and engage. You get to be a part of the conversation. That's why I do live local radio, Tom, because this is an hour, in this case, every day, where we get to dig in together and have the conversations, call in, ask questions, participate. That's why I do live radio. That's why you listen live. And I appreciate it, and I appreciate you every day. And I appreciate you, Tom.
Well, thank you, Zach. I mean, what if, imagine, if there were a podcast you could interact with on a real-time live basis. And call, this is kind of, it's an inside joke between Zach and I, but it's funny to hear people lament. They listen to a podcast. They're like, well, man, I wish I could interact with that podcast. You can. It's called a radio show, and this one's a perfect example.
I love it. Let's make that inside joke an outside joke. Someone during the pandemic tweeted, in these troubling times, it'd be great if we had a podcast that you could interact with live in real time. And someone cheekily, it wasn't me, responded, that's called a radio show. So that's what we're up to today. And we educate one new podcaster listener a day. We try to, Tom, that this is the live version.
Interaction is key and welcome.
Yes, absolutely. 790-2040. It's the number our first guest today used to call in herself, Leah Marquez Peterson, chairwoman of the Arizona Corporation Commission. After that, I want to talk about the audit. We had the Arizona Republic reporter calling in. I've got a couple of guests shaping up, one of them being Senate President Karen Fan, who will be with us on Friday to discuss. I want to talk about the audit and some of my views as a citizen, some of my thoughts, and I think it'll be with a twist that I hope is thoughtful and insightful. Leah Marquez Peterson, good morning to you. Thanks for being on with us.
Good morning, Zach. Thank you for allowing me to be on your show.
As always, I think you're still the only commissioner hailing from Southern Arizona. Is that still correct?
Right. Only commissioner based outside of Maricopa County and the only Southern Arizonan sitting in a statewide seat. So it really is an honor to have been elected to this seat.
Southern Arizona. Well, that's why it's a why it's actually, you know, we're always grateful for your time for those very reasons, Leah Marquez Peterson. And today, you know, I really wanted to have you on because there was some interesting thought pieces out there in the community in follow up to the May meeting of the commission. Specifically around clean energy rules versus clean energy guidelines or mandates for the state. Can you describe for us first, and then we'll get into it, what the clean energy legislation, if you will, that the Arizona Corporation Commission was discussing in the first place, what it would mean for Arizona?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I appreciate that because the local media honestly has not done a good job explaining what we discuss and the history behind this. So I'm trying to get out and speak to as many places as I can. So as people may be aware, the Arizona Corporation Commission regulates utility industry. So I'll start there, electricity, water, gas, wastewater, and so on. So for the last 4 years, the Corporation Commission, so that's commissioners prior to me, have been working on energy rules. So really, what is Arizona's energy future? And we see about 70 to 80 rate cases a year. Of course, those in electricity and water and so on. But it was important to the commissioners to work on kind of Arizona's direction related to energy. So I've been on the commission now about 2 years. I was appointed by the governor in May of 2019 and then elected to continue in the seat for the next 4 years, actually. And I've been a big proponent of 100% clean energy and zero carbon emissions for Arizona. There are a lot of pieces to our energy rules that lead us to that direction. It was important to me also to lead on an amendment to the energy rules that they were technology agnostic, meaning we weren't going to pick the technology the utilities would use to get there because there's so much new innovation and technology coming along. We wanted to ensure they had all the tools at their disposal to reach clean energy for the state of Arizona. And I know how important that is to so many families throughout the state. It really is a priority for even voters during this last election. What you saw come to a head last week was I had put, as the chairwoman, the energy rules back on our agenda. We voted on it in November of 2020 with two different commissioners at the table and passed preliminary energy rules that we then put on the agenda this past month. There were about 11 or 12 amendments filed by myself, as well as Commissioner O'Connor, Commissioner Olson, all Republicans on the commission that wanted to make sure there were protections in place for ratepayers as we move forward on energy rules. And that's really where the controversy you saw play out in the media occurred. From my perspective, I could not in good conscience vote for these energy rules as is, because we did not know the impact to the ratepayers of Arizona. I wanted to see these mandates, these energy rules, move from a mandate to a goal, and then also hold the utilities accountable by putting these guardrails in place through these processes we have called integrated resource proposals and all sorts. Of course, our reflexity of the energy rules that would ensure that every year we were holding the utilities accountable going towards this goal. The big difference, Zach, between the mandate and the goal is if we had voted on those energy rules as is, from my perspective, we were giving a blank check to the utility companies that they could then move forward in a direction that could be financially traumatizing to Arizona ratepayers. But we didn't know. We were operating, we were voting in a vacuum, in a position where we did not know the financial impact to the ratepayers. And that's ultimately what held me back from this and voting on it as is. I think it was important, and I had a responsibility to the ratepayers that voted me into this seat to make sure that we weren't going to vote on something based on some political ideology, but ultimately we didn't know the financial impact. So that was why it was important to me to modify the energy rules from a mandate to a goal. When it came to the final vote, Commissioner O'Connor and myself voted yes on the energy rules to move forward in that regard. And unfortunately, the other three, Commissioner Olson and Commissioner Tovar and Commissioner Kennedy, did not vote in support of the energy rules. So they died. We have to decide now what we do next, and it really depends on where we have a majority of the commission's interest in moving forward.
We're with Leah Marquez Peterson this morning, chairwoman of the Arizona Corporation Commission. There's a lot to unpack there, Commissioner. Before I ask a couple of follow-up questions, I think the first would be, if you look at the commissioners on the dais, do you feel like the majority, if not unanimous, there's a unanimous agreement to follow, as you have said, a 100% kind of clean energy future for Arizona? Is there anyone that disagrees with that? Is it just about how to get there, or is there dissent on the dais, if you will, of the amount of clean energy and that future for Arizona?
Yeah, and that's a good question, Zach. I believe that we have unanimous support for that based on what I've heard from the dais. Because we're elected and we have open meeting laws, we can't gather together and kind of work it out. But I think the ultimate concern is, how do we get there? You've got folks on the commission saying it should be entirely driven by free market with the lowest cost option, and others just saying get it done regardless of the cost, I guess, based on the way they've been voting. I think I've been probably somewhere there in the middle, saying absolutely support clean energy, zero carbon emissions, but I will not do it at any cost. I want to make sure this is affordable. It provides the reliability we need in the utility industry as we move forward. We're talking 2050. That's more, almost 30 years out. We have a number of mechanisms or tools, I'll call them, in our IRP, our integrated resource planning process, that we can use to hold the utilities accountable, ensure they're moving away from coal, that they're investing in the right types of energy generation, and taking the right kind of actions to move us in that direction so we can achieve that goal. Regardless of how we voted, what's interesting is both APS and TEP have made their own energy rule commitments to their shareholders, to their ratepayers. So they're going to continue to move on in that direction, though I know a lot of folks have reached out to my office saying, no, that's not enough. We need the commission to vote on something so that utilities are truly held accountable. So I'm trying to work through that, something that would work for at least three of our commissioners and ensure that we have some type of energy rules in place. But unfortunately, that failed last week.
I like to look at all angles of these stories as much as possible, and there's always more angles than I have time to look at. But the Sierra Club wrote an article and described it this way. The ACC rejected, this week, an energy rules package after it was gutted by an amendment from Commissioner Justin Olson, a Republican on the dais, to eliminate the carbon-free energy efficiency and storage requirements and making them optional. Just to recap kind of what you shared up at the top, is that a fair description of what happened, and describes why you switched from last fall from being more kind of rule-oriented to now making it more of a goal and something to work for?
No, it's not an absolutely clear distinction on what happened. What Commissioner Olson proposed, and I supported, was a change from a mandate to a goal for the entire energy rules. I mean, energy storage was a component within that, but we were talking, again, financial accountability for the ratepayers. Over the last year, as we've been facing the global pandemic, I've been on your show a number of times, the calls, the questions I get are that people have been laid off, they're facing financial uncertainty, they're really struggling, and we're still struggling coming out of this pandemic. Affordability is top of mind for me. So we've got to put a package together that ensures that we can get to clean energy, zero carbon emissions, but that it's affordable and provides reliability. What's also looming over this is we don't want to look like California with rolling blackouts. We don't want to look like Texas that had lack of kind of accountability for the utilities and extreme weather and, you know, the failure of their system during a very cold period of time. So we've got to balance all of that approach. So I'm working towards a balanced approach to this that would ensure affordability while we're achieving clean energy. Groups like the Sierra Club and others have just pushed for support for this 100% without considering the affordability factor. And that's not something that's acceptable to me.
With Leah Marquez Peterson this morning, chairwoman of the Arizona Corporation Commission. And Leah, thank you for a couple of those follow-up questions. I realize that I'm unpacking this on the fly. There's a lot in here that hasn't been reported fully on, and I don't think that I fully realized that until coming on the show with you, quite honestly. So I hope I'm not asking you to repeat yourself, but maybe I'm in my listener's shoes of going, wait a second, keep going into that in a little bit more detail. So thank you for those follow-ups. Let's go to a break. We'll wrap up this topic when we come back, talk about a little bit more Arizona Corporation Commission news. And there's one more hanging item out there that the local media has been kind of stirring the pot around. Leah Marquez Peterson, I want to provide space for you to close, if you will.
Absolutely.
When we come back here on 1030 The Voice, Tipping Point with Zach Yenser, trusted local news and talk. We'll be right back.
Real issues with real people. Tipping Point with Zach Yenser, 1030 The Voice.
Hey there, Ari here with the Marinas team at Nova Home Loans. We share Zach's passion on Tipping Point of shaping yours and our community's best possible future. If that looks like purchasing a home in 2021, we want to be your partner in choosing the program that is the best possible decision for your financial and family goals. Call me at 878-7518 and let me know you heard us on Tipping Point to get started.
Ariel Ari Barrera, NMLS ID 1982127. Nova Home Loans, NMLS number 3087, BK0902429. Equal housing opportunity.
The Men in Black are back. FC Tucson is our city's own professional soccer team, featuring talent from around the country and the world. They're ready to get back to business and a winning season for Tucson fans. Each one of the 14 home games this season will be uniquely curated and feature the sights, smells, and sounds of Tucson, but with the intensity of a playoff berth at Keno Stadium. Tickets now on sale. Head to fctucson.com to get yours for an exciting season of high-flying football. fctucson.com.
In 1994, the University of Arizona took the bold step of acquiring an industrial park in southeastern Pima County and transforming it into a university research park. With over 25 years of success, Tech Parks Arizona continues to advance innovation. Whether it's 40 startups at the University of Arizona Center for Innovation or the new Tech Park at the Bridges that just broke ground, they are integral in shaping the future of Southern Arizona. Tech Parks Arizona, moving innovation at the speed of business.
Your Tucson Museum of Art is pleased to share the imagery of America in The Wyeths, three generations of works from the Bank of America collection. Artistic styles vary across time and place, but the bond of family unites them, and the shared spirit of human experience and American traditions. Timed ticket reservations required. Visit TucsonMuseumOfArt.org for more information and to support the Tucson Museum of Art.
You love Decibel Coffee Works, the coffee of Tipping Point and the Yenser household, for their quality roasted coffee and beans. Now they're giving you even more reasons. Open now, the Scratch Kitchen at the MSA Annex will provide quick and easy breakfast and lunch with vegetarian and vegan options available to enjoy with your drink. Visit the MSA Annex right off the I-10 and Cushing to be one of the first to try. 267 South Avenida del Convento.
The economy is moving forward, and Arizona businesses are looking at new opportunities and challenges as we emerge from COVID-19. Leading companies are planning how to respond to new business and rebuild their teams and are looking for critical talent now. The right talent in key positions will make all the difference, and having a trusted and dedicated talent acquisition partner will give you an edge. Devin and her team at Talent Store will connect you with top talent while positively impacting time to hire, retention, and your employer brand. Learn more by visiting yourtalentstore.com and schedule scheduling time with Devin and her team.
Trusted local news and talk all day, every day. 1030 The Voice.
Good morning, Tucson and Southern Arizona. Welcome back into the 1030 The Voice studios for this drive time hour of Tipping Point with Zach Yenser. I'm your host, Zach Yenser. On the line with us now is the chair of the Arizona Corporation Commission, Leah Marquez-Peterson. Leah, I want to wrap up our clean energy conversation from the last segment by asking you what comes next later this year as the kind of clean energy decision making is postponed a later in the year. What are next steps to figure out what we're doing here in Arizona?
Thanks, Zach. That really is the million-dollar question in terms of what's next. It's determined really by whether or not at least three of us can come together on a package that we would approve that in my case would prioritize affordability, sustainability, and reliability as we move towards 100% clean energy and zero carbon emissions. If we can't come to that, do we want to consider bringing up some of these very important components that were part of the energy rules, again, that were 4 years in the making with thousands of hours of public comment sessions and so on? There are pieces of it, such as the integrated resource planning process I talked about, or the all-source RFP process that we could move forward separately, but is there support for that? It really depends. So we're kind of in that mode right now, determining, what are the next steps.
Do you have any idea of at what point in the year it will happen? I ask because one of the big questions came from Commissioner Tovar around the makeup of the commission later on in the year. Are we talking summer? Are we talking fall? Any idea?
No, I mean, we could be done, right? That could have been the end of it. I don't know. One thing that's particularly important to me, and I had to write letters and give speeches and kind of demand that a cost-benefit analysis was done, and I did this earlier in the year. So the staff has currently hired a consultant to do that cost-benefit analysis on the portfolios that the utilities have put forward and the clean energy rules, and that is supposed to come to us this summer. So that's important data to have, whether energy rules move forward or not, really. So that could be a timeline, but there is no set timeline, because at this point, Commissioner Tovar unfortunately voted no, as did Olson and Kennedy, so there is no timeline at this point.
Got it. Leah Marquez-Peterson, I have one question that I do want to get in here in the final 4.5 minutes we have, but any other things on the desk for the Corporation Commission that might be important for Southern Arizonans to know either now or in the future?
I mean, we are dealing with so many different issues. We regulate some 300 water companies, so we've had a number of water company cases and issues before us. We're in the middle of electric vehicle implementation policy, and I know that's of interest to so many folks around the state. What does that look like? Or electric vehicle charging infrastructure, things of that nature. So there's a lot that we're working through. Nothing probably as headline-grabbing as energy rules, but things that are very important to communities across the state. A lot of the water companies in particular that we work with are in rural Arizona.
Leah Marquez Peterson, chairwoman of the Arizona Corporation Commission. I want to leave space for you in person, so to speak. Your real voice here, Anna Tovar, seemed to be hinting at her thought that a couple commissioners, including yourself, might be eyeing a higher office. Some local papers seem to kind of hint at that as well and stir that pot a little bit. Do you want to address that here with us today for Southern Arizonans listening?
Yeah, so we were in the middle of our energy rules debate talking about a hearing division amendment, so kind of wonky item, when Commissioner Tovar asked about political aspirations for all of the commissioners. So my response, especially as chair, is this is an inappropriate conversation to have in the middle of debating a hearing division amendment. But I told her at that point, at this moment, I've not heard from any of the commissioners that anyone plans to resign or that they're seeking a different office. And the meeting kind of ended on that regard. Now, unfortunately, Tim Steller at the Arizona Daily Star, instead of covering kind of the meat of the energy rules, picked that up, and that was his headline about that piece in the hearing division amendment, so which I thought was a bit crazy. In particular to me, and I told Tim this, I told other media, I'm not planning to pursue Congressional District 2. I worked very hard to win a statewide seat, especially as a Southern Arizonan. Folks know how tough that can be. And have just been honored to be elected to a four-year term. And I'm going to stay put. I'm going to focus on the commission. I'm honored to be the chairperson of the commission. So that's something that I've really been working hard at, spending a lot of hours ensuring, you know, the commission's operating smoothly. And that's my story. I don't know who else she might be talking about, and she'll have to address that perhaps on your show in the future.
Well, you listening, you heard it directly from Leah Marquez Peterson yourself. I asked the question. Leah answered. That was left open-ended in some reports of the meeting. Thank you, Leah Marquez Peterson, for addressing it.
No, yeah, thanks for the question. At least being able to get out and explain, as you know, how things get spun and it gets a little crazy.
You know, that's the beauty of long form live local radio. We get to have a half an hour conversation on these things, and it's hopefully a helpful piece of getting the word out on important issues. Leah, we got about a minute left to go. Where can people go to either reach out to you or reach out to your office about issues related to the Arizona Corporation Commission?
Yeah, they can go to our website, which is azcc.gov. azcc.gov. You can see all five of our photos there. The commissioners send us emails. Specifically on each of our pages, we have press releases we put out. And I did put out a personal statement immediately following the energy rules vote. So if you want to know more details about my position or ask questions, you can find that again on our website, azcc.gov.
Super. Leah, thank you so much for your time this morning. We'll do this again soon as, again, the only Southern Arizona to be holding statewide office right now and the only one on the commission hailing from Southern Arizona, even though you represent all of the state. It's an unfortunate distinction, but one that we're proud that you have. So thank you for representing Southern Arizona. Thank you for being on the show, and we'll do it again soon.
Absolutely. Thank you, Zach. Have a great day.
Thank you, Leah. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about the election audit that we covered with the Arizona Republic reporter Jen Fifield yesterday. I've been kind of chewing on that conversation, and I want to share some of my citizen thoughts ahead of a couple key interviews with some folks who are either commissioning this on the ground, watching it. We're not done talking about this. The country is watching. We're watching. And my thoughts on the other side. 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk.
Minute and CBS News at the bottom of every hour. 1030, The Voice. Trusted local news and talk.
If you are current or previous law enforcement, fire, paramedic, or military and are considering buying or selling real estate, then listen up. CNC Partners is dedicated to serving those who serve. When you buy or sell with their real estate team, they will give 10% of their commission back to you and your family at closing, as well as donate an additional 5% to the charity of your choice that serves first responders and or the military. If you're interested in this program, reach out directly at 520-406-0233. That's 406-0233. In 1994, the University of Arizona took the bold step of acquiring an industrial park in southeastern Pima County and transforming it into a university research park. With over 25 years of success, Tech Parks Arizona continues to advance innovation. Whether it's 40 startups at the University of Arizona Center for Innovation or the new tech park at the Bridges that just broke ground, they are integral in shaping the future of Southern Arizona. Tech Parks Arizona, moving innovation at the speed of business.
The Men in Black are back. FC Tucson is our city's own professional soccer team, featuring talent from around the country and the world. They're ready to get back to business and a winning season for Tucson fans. Each one of the 14 home games this season will be uniquely curated and feature the sights, smells, and sounds of Tucson, but with the intensity of a playoff berth at Keno Stadium. Tickets now on sale. Head to fctucson.com to get yours for an exciting season of high-flying football. fctucson.com.
Support for this program comes from Vantage West Credit Union, a member-owned financial institution dedicated to the mission of making this community too strong to fail. Banks own you, you own us. Vantage West, member NCUA.
Trusted local news and talk. 1030, The Voice.
Good morning, Tucson and all of Southern Arizona. Welcome back into the 1030 The Voice studios. We're partway through this drive time hour of Tipping Point with Zach Yenser, daily in-depth news, conversation, and talk about the people, ideas, and issues shaping Tucson's future. If you just missed it or just joined us, rather, we wrapped up a two-segment conversation there at the bottom of the hour with Leah Marquez-Peterson, chairwoman of the Arizona Corporation Commission, a testy ACC meeting last week around energy rules, really the culmination of years of efforts, and it got testy. And so we got to chat with Leah about a few of those details. And Tom, I would say we got into it in a way that, and this is not throwing any shade anywhere, it's more about Tipping Point than anybody else, I promise. I think we got into some things that haven't yet gotten covered in that way anywhere else. I felt like we did good work in that half.
It felt almost like an exclusive coming out here, Zach.
It did.
Because it's been addressed but not covered, you know what, right? I mean? And so it's nice to give a voice to that.
You know, the best part was an accident, in the sense, like, you know, it wasn't like, I'm going to get the exclusive take. We just have conversations, right? An issue is brought up, we try to have it on the show. We really do try, so we can get in the weeds, have those long-form conversation. That's the beauty of this thing we do called live local radio. So that was fun. You can listen back to it on the podcast. By the way, 790-2040 is the number you can call the rest of the way. It's you and me, Tucson and Southern Arizona, the rest of the way here for today's show. And I wanted to circle back to the conversation that we had with the Arizona Republic reporter Jen Fifield yesterday on the audit of the 2.1 million Maricopa County ballots from the 2020 election. And I've been chewing on that since I had the conversation yesterday with Jen, which again, I thought was really good. You can listen back to that on the podcast. And let me preface what I'm about to say as a citizen. I take it very seriously when I insert my opinion. I choose very carefully where I do that, because I think that part of the reason that people listen to this show is to get kind of the unfiltered, no BS, just the facts in terms of the perspectives of the different people on both sides of an issue. You come here as a platform for thought, not for me to tell you what to think. And I think the moment where I come across trying to tell you what to think, I will have strayed from what my goal is on this show, is just to throw some stuff on the table and we hash it out together. I think that's the beauty of news. I think that's the beauty of this platform. I have State Senate President Karen Fan on Friday, who again commissioned and her Senate majority paid about $150,000 for this audit. We won't talk only about the audit, but it's going to be a huge piece of the conversation. She's on the show Friday. I'm also in conversation with Mr. Brakey and Ken Bennett, former Secretary of State, who are on the ground facilitating this effort. So I'm trying to get a variety of perspectives on what I think is an important issue that the country is looking at. And it's important because the country is watching, as well as us here locally. But here's what I wanted to kind of figure out. And Tom, you might have to help me make sense of this because it's still fresh on the brain. But I think there's really two conversations that we need to be having on this audit. One is a merit-based conversation. One is a process-based conversation. And I guess what I mean by that is the merit conversation is, should we be doing it or not? Like, is it going to solve it? Is it going to be helpful? Is it going to provide answers? Should we be doing it? Is it necessary? And I see that as a political conversation. I see that as a political conversation. Republicans, the majority in Arizona, say yes. Democrats, a majority, say no. Let's move on, blah, 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 right? And I will leave that conversation at least for another day. Or let somebody else have fun with it. But I started to think about, we're not having necessarily the process conversation. Besides the merits of it, how is it going? And is the process in place now going to create an end result that gives confidence to anybody? And this is going to be my frank question to State Senate President Karen Fann, to Mr. Bennett. As a citizen that's not looking to force feed you an idea, but to ask the questions. And here's what I mean. When a reporter knows the color of pens to be used more than the guy leading the audit effort, that doesn't create confidence to me. That this process is being done in a way that's going to create answers. And to me, that's not a Republican or a Democratic thought. To me, that is asking, is anyone going to come out of this thing feeling confident this thing was done well to answer the questions it hopes to answer? That's a process question. Right? When a reporter goes on the floor and says, hey, you can't be using blue pens because that could fraud the effort. You have to be using red pens in an audit. And the head of Cyber Ninjas says, well, I didn't know about that, and then comes back to the reporter and says, thank you for telling me, you're right, we'll change it. That doesn't give me confidence that people leading this know what's going on. When the state Senate provide $150,000 to the effort only, when nonpartisan individuals for months have been saying, you don't have the manpower, you don't have the time in place, you don't have the dollars to get this done in an expeditious way. These kind of efforts take a long time and are only shortened if you have a massive amount of resources. When only $150,000 is inputted, that doesn't give me confidence that we were clear going in what was going to be required. And then when we have to go private fundraise to raise enough dollars to hire more volunteers, to train more volunteers, when we don't have enough people on the ground doing this, and we have to go out and private fundraise to raise more funds, that doesn't give me confidence as a citizen that we were clear going in what this is going to require and that it will come out at the end in a way that makes sense. By the way, you can call me 790-24. I am being a fellow citizen. I'm sharing my thoughts. If you have different insights, this is open game, 790-2040. I want to know, if you're listening, whether you're Republican or a Democrat, what of this process, what will have to happen for you to have confidence that there either is an issue to address or that there were any challenges with the election? So I'll continue. You know, there was this very nationally covered story where an individual who is counting or is looking at the ballots and tallying them and reviewing them is someone who was at the Capitol on January 6th. Now, I'm not going to go down the political route. I'm just going to say, as a citizen, if I'm having a ideally nonpartisan audit where there are people with no agendas just looking at the facts, I don't want someone who thinks that it was stolen in the first place any more than I want someone on the far left who thinks there's no problem at all. Neither of those people are going to solve this problem. So as a citizen, as I'm watching that, I'm continuing to scratch my head. When I learned that only 1/8 of the ballots to this point, 275,000, are counted, and we've been doing it this long, when I look at 2.1 million ballots and I go, this could stretch to the summer and fall, that doesn't give me confidence. When I look at the fact that this is only one county and not the other counties that we have, that doesn't give me confidence. When I hear that ballots are going to have to be moved because of a graduation, because of events, and then moved back into the Coliseum. And meanwhile, there are some reporters who aren't allowed in, and there are some who are wandering around at will. That doesn't give me confidence. Now, hear me, friends. I'm not having the political conversation. Y'all have that one. I'm not here for that fun today. I'm not saying the merits of whether we need this or not, or should we do this or not so we can restore confidence. I think those are philosophical arguments that have merit to have. We'll have it a different day. But I look at the process. Have we watched a process that seems clean, well thought out, well oiled, and ready to solve the problem? And I don't know if you're Republican or a Democrat, if you look at this and go, yeah, at the end of it, I want to be confident in the results, whatever the results are. Again, I'm not talking about what's being looked at. I'm not talking about why we're looking at. I'm looking at the process. And I got to hand it to people like Ken Bennett. I mentioned this to Jen Fifield yesterday from the Arizona Republic. Ken Bennett has been, in some regards, fairly straightforward of what he likes and what he doesn't, you know, of what he feels like is going well and what isn't. I think we're going to try to have him on the show next week. I think he's going to be a straight shooter. I would hope so. And I appreciate that. I think there is some growing clarity about the challenges that are had. So anyway, Tom, that's what I wanted to bring up. I know it's a different angle on this story that is unfolding. I think we need to be looking at the process as much as we are the merit. And I think to date, we have had a conversation that has really blended merit and process. And to me, those are two different conversations. And I asked Jen this yesterday, and she's a reporter, and she walked around the question. And I don't mean that in a negative way, because her job is not to answer the question I asked her. But I said, what is going to come out of this that gives either confidence to Republicans who are concerned that they have no reason to be concerned? Or what does this give to Democrats who don't think there's a problem? What is going to come out of this that's going to convince Democrats that, hey, we have something to look at? I don't know what the answer is to that. But what I'm telling you is that I'm not going to close the conversation there. You're getting my citizen thoughts. And we're going to have State Senate President Karen Fan on. We're going to have hopefully Ken Bennett and Mr. John Brakey on as well. We are going to have a continued conversation on this. But I think we need to start having a dialogue, and I'll stop after I repeat it, between the merit conversation, should we be doing it, to the process question, how is it going? Those are two conversations. One is political and one is logistics. And I think we need to stop blending them, and we'll be better for it if we do. 790-2040 is your live line opportunity to join the conversation. We'll go to the phone lines when we get back from the break. We'll continue this conversation if we need to, or we'll move on to other themes. It's really your time. 790-2040. Give us a call here on 1030 The Voice. Tipping Point returns in just a minute.
Trusted local news and talk all morning on 1030 The Voice.
If you are current or previous law enforcement, fire, paramedic, or military and are considering buying or selling real estate, then listen up. CNC Partners is dedicated to serving those who serve. When you buy or sell with their real estate team, they will give 10% of their commission back to you and your family at closing, as well as donate an additional 5% to the charity of your choice that serves first responders and or the military. If you're interested in this program, reach out directly at 520-406-0233. That's 406-0233.
Now open to you. The Arizona Sands Club is your new home away from home. Located inside the Lowell Stevens Football Facility, this private dining and lifestyle club is a culmination of a long-held goal to create a social gathering space within our university and community. Filled with Wildcat spirit against the backdrop of Arizona Stadium, call us today to learn how you can take advantage of our dining and meeting spaces for personal use, business purposes, and social events and celebrations. Call 621-8300.
Your Tucson Museum of Art is pleased to share the imagery of America in the Wyeths, three generations of works from the Bank of America collection. Artistic styles vary across time and place, but the bond of family unites them, and the shared spirit of human experience and American traditions. Timed ticket reservations required. Visit TucsonMuseumOfArt.org for more information and to support the Tucson Museum of Art.
Hey there, Ari here with the Marinas team at Nova Home Loans. We share Zach's passion on Tipping Point of shaping yours and our community's best possible future. If that looks like purchasing a home in 2021, we want to be your partner in choosing the program that is the best possible decision for your financial and family goals. Call me at 878-7518 and let me know you heard us on Tipping Point to get started.
Ariel Ari Barrera, NMLS ID, 1982127. Nova Home Loans, NMLS number 3087, BK0902429. Equal housing opportunity.
Why I love where I live. It's a brand and movement that began here in Tucson to spark gratitude and celebrate the good things about where we live. Like so many businesses, they had to make changes to their hours and operations during COVID-19. But I'm so excited to announce that they are now reopened for regular hours. Go to whyiloveWhereILive.com right now to see all the new products and offerings and plan a visit to their location at the MSA Annex on Cushing off the I-10 and Avenida del Convento. Why do you love where you live?
The economy is moving forward, and Arizona businesses are looking at new opportunities and challenges as we emerge from COVID-19. Leading companies are planning how to respond to new business and rebuild their teams and are looking for critical talent now. The right talent in key positions will make all the difference, and having a trusted and dedicated talent acquisition partner will give you an edge. Devin and her team at Talent Store will connect you with top talent while positively impacting time to hire, retention, and your employer brand. Learn more by visiting yourtalentstore.com and scheduling time with Devin and her team.
Support for this program comes from Vantage West Credit Union, a member-owned financial institution dedicated to the mission of making this community too strong to fail. Banks own you, you own us. Vantage West, member NCUA.
This is The Voice, 1030, Tucson's trusted news and talk.
Welcome on back in to this final segment of our drive time hour of Tipping Point with Zach Yenser here this morning on 1030 The Voice. We've had a full hour. We've talked to Chair of the Arizona Corporation Commission, Leo Marquez Peterson. I'm giving my my chewed on thoughts. Can we say that, Tom? Is that the right way to say it? My chewed on thoughts.
The bolus of your thoughts.
There we go. And I get accused of using big words, Tom. Tom Callahan, come on, man. I've never heard of that word before. I'll go look it up when we're done. But my thoughts yesterday, we had an Arizona Republic reporter who's been on the floor of the Coliseum and actually spent 6 hours going through as a volunteer counting and looking at the ballots, a part of this 2.1 million ballot election review audit from the 2020 election, giving some of my thoughts on that. I want to go to the phone lines. I think we have Joel on line two. Tom, Joel, thanks for listening. Thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
I just want to say, first of all, thank you for having this conversation, and thank you for having somebody like a reporter who I believe she was actually a real good reporter who didn't show her bias, if she had any, didn't, you know, put it into her reporting. But what I'm hearing when I hear you talk about all these legitimate questions as to whether or not we can have any kind of final confidence in anything actually being decided, I feel that's how I've always felt about all of our elections. Every election, I think a lot of people in the United States in particular take a lot of things on faith. We go to our particular places to vote. If we show up in person, we put our ballot in the mail, and most of the time we don't think about there being a large amount of fraud because, you know, we have faith that if there is some mistakes, they're relatively little, and on the whole, the vote was correct and this person got elected, even though we've seen in the past, I think the Kennedy election was put over the top by Mayor Daley and his machine in Chicago, but we still kept going forward. So at any one of these points, we could have questions, but then this last election, which was during the COVID problem, I saw particularly, you know, I read the news, I see things going on, and I saw a lot of different venues where the COVID problem was being used as the premise for people who were in political power to modify the process that previously we had used, claiming that it was necessary, whether it's extending voting times or whether it's restricting this or whatever else. We changed an already, you know, not fallible, but of course, in a system with as many people as we have voting, you're going to have problems all the time. But then these problems became a little more accentuated, not only because of the COVID, but because, as we found out from the results, this country is very split, right, almost down the middle. So anybody had an excuse to further say, oh, there was voter suppression, or, oh, there was fraud, forgetting about how that happens pretty much every election anyway, but on a small enough basis that none of us feel like, you know, the election was robbed. So your process now, thinking about what they're doing in Maricopa, quite frankly, I think it's kind of a, I would say, theater trying to get people to have some faith again in the election process by supposedly ratifying the fact that there wasn't, you know, an awful lot of fraud. Or if there was, it was minimal and it really didn't affect the outcome. At least that's what I hope it'll show.
Joel, I appreciate your call. And I'd love just to kind of ask you a question if you can hang on for another second. And this is a genuine question. I'm not challenging you at all. What are you looking for out of this audit? What are one or two things that you think will get to the end? If you can see XYZ, you will have a restored faith in our election processes. And do you think those things are going to come out of this process?
Well, I have to premise that by telling you my faith in our electoral system is not shaken. I don't believe that there was any more of these same kind of mistakes that, as I was saying, happen every single election. Usually not in the off years, you know, and certainly not as much, I don't think, for local. But when we have a presidential election and all the down ballots on that, I feel that there are always going to be areas where, you know, the voting was questionable, this was questionable, that was questionable, but it never rises to the point of there actually being a quote-unquote stolen election. So I don't look for this audit to do anything except to maybe come to a conclusion, and I'm hoping that their conclusion is we couldn't find any massive fraud. We couldn't find evidence that there was such massive fraud it changed the outcome of any election, which, quite frankly, that's how I feel about what happened in the last election. I don't think there's enough fraud that people have actually been able to come forward and document that any of us should be considering, but that doesn't mean that no fraud occurred.
Joel, we try to take all the calls that we can, but I'm really glad that we took yours this morning because I think you have an interesting perspective on this. One final question. If you got to go, please, I'm keeping you. I appreciate you calling.
I appreciate the conversation.
For someone that, unlike yourself, believes that there was a widespread amount, a lack of integrity in this election. So someone maybe not like yourself where you're open to the result, but you don't believe that there was a huge amount of fraud. Do you think we're going to come out of this process and this large majority of Republicans who we know statistically just think something didn't go right? Do you think a majority of Republicans in Arizona are going to, at the end of this thing and probably the fall at this point, do you think we're going to have a Republican voter base and a Republican party that goes, yep, okay, I'm satisfied. Everything was kosher. Let's move on. Do you think that's going to happen?
I think that they should, but I think that because it's politics, they probably won't. You know, if I can grab a hair and make you think I'm holding a log to get you to start listening to me, that seems to be how our politics works. So if I can shake up the boat, if I can make you question what's happening, whether or not it's legitimate, unfortunately, that's a messaging thing. And both parties are absolutely prone to doing that. You know, whether you're saying there was voter suppression, whether you were saying there was fraud, all these things have to be taken as part of the mix. And we have to go, you know, what was it? I think it was Winston Churchill that said the American system of voting is the worst in the world, except for everybody else.
All right. Joel, this was a fantastic call. I really appreciate your time and thanks for letting me ask a few follow-up questions. On this program, I'm not trying to force feed a point of view. I want to stir the pot a little bit in a helpful way on issues that I think are important to our community and democracy. And we have these kind of conversations. Joel, thanks for listening. I hope you listen on Friday. I'm looking forward to my conversation with State Senate President Karen Fan.
I listen to your program every day, and I appreciate the fact that you're doing what you're doing and the fact that you're having this kind kind of a conversation sets you apart from a lot of other radio shows. So thank you for being a platform as opposed to being a megaphone. I guess I should put it that way.
Joel, I appreciate you, sir. Thank you so much for your time.
Okay, have a great day.
And Joel, thank you for listening every day. You know, that's the goal. And if y'all keep listening, I'll keep doing it. That is the goal. And I really appreciate that. That was a great call. Get that guy a radio show. That was some insightful stuff. Joel, I appreciate it. 790-2040. We're probably out of time for calls today, but we'll have some time for call-ins and questions tomorrow. I think for the sake of our American democracy, and again, I approach what I'm about to say not as a Republican or as a Democrat. I think this is my big question, why I brought up the process. Are we doing this in a way that is going to get to the end, that is going to change anybody's mind? And I thought Joel's answer to sort of that was pretty insightful. And I think that's the scary part, to be quite honest, is I think the answer is no. And again, I'm not arguing the merit. We'll have that argument another day. Should we be doing this or not? I'm not arguing that today. Are we going to get to the end of this? And are we doing it in a way that will create any more confidence? But at the end of the day, is this going to change Republicans' mind or Democrats' mind in Arizona? I'm sad to say I don't know if it will. And I think maybe that's the conversation, Tom, we should be having. When we get to the end of this thing, is it going to change minds? Is it going to create any more confidence? Is it going to create any more conversation about things to change? I think the sad answer is no. And that's maybe more of a statement on our democracy than it is on the audit that's going on. I don't know. But that's my approach to this. Let's talk about, what does this mean for our American processes and where we go from here in our community? That's the conversation we'll keep having. Tucson, thanks for listening. If you missed anything, you can always catch it on the podcast. We're on iTunes, Spotify, on the KVUI.com site. Just search for Tipping Point with Zach Yenser and you will find us. We might hear from Reyna Montoya tomorrow. I'm waiting to hear back. She actually got Republicans in the state Senate to vote to allow a 2022 ballot item where Arizonans will decide if Dreamers can get in-state tuition. And she got bipartisan support. It's a pretty crazy story, and we're going to hear from her either tomorrow or Thursday. Of course, our faith and culture contributor, Jeff Loxton, will join on Wednesday, per usual. That's it for our show today. Hugh Hewitt coming up next. Bill Buckmaster after that. That's it for us here on Tipping Point this morning. We'll be back same time, same place, 9 a.m. drive time here on 1030 The Voice. Take care, Tucson. Stay healthy.